Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you live from the Sleep Deprivation Institute's secret underwater headquarters somewhere off the coast of Iowa, it's the man dedicated to keeping the internet completely wired. This is Which Goes Off with Widget Walls.
Friends are dead. Not what it used to be. Now you'll never have a place like home to rest your head.
Hello, hello, and hello. This is Widget Walls, and you're listening to Widge Goes Off here on QuickStopEntertainment.com. So, how is everybody? I'm actually feeling close to being human again. And those of you who know me are startled right now because you probably didn't even know that I was human. Neither did I. I'm a real boy now. Woo! So anyway, let's see. What the hell do we need to talk about this week? First of all, let's talk box office, shall we? Well, it was better than it has been. Let's put it that way. Gridiron Gang comes in at number one with a $15 million. That's from Sony. It costs $30 million to make. It'll make its money back. It's a definite rental. It's one of those feel-good sports movies, and guys will eat that up on video, so no worries there. The Black Dahlia, which I actually want to see because, I don't know, noir done correctly in film, especially, you know, recent stuff like L.A. Confidential, which is by the same author, right? Love that freaking movie, so I'm hoping that this will be along those same lines. That was from Universal. It came in second with $10 million, and it cost $50 million. So I don't know. It's got a road to hoe ahead of it, but again, has good DVD appeal, and it'll probably win some awards. It's got that Oscar flavor to it. Everyone's Hero comes in at number three, which I don't even know what the hell that is, honestly. Hang on a second. I will click. Oh, it's some animated film that I've never even heard of, with the voices of Whoopi Goldberg and William H. Macy from Fox. That's terribly exciting. Anyway, that came in at number three, and no one cares. The Last Kiss comes in at number four, and it's the big winner for per cinema dollars. It did about almost $3,500 per cinema. It cost $20 million to make. It did $4.7 million. It's got good buzz, and it looks like it's just in about limited release, so they'll probably roll it out to more screens next weekend. The Covenant, after I believe that came in at number one last week, I think that's right, drops to number five with the typical close to 50% drop. It does $4.7 million. It's done $15 million to date. Invincible drops to number six, and it's made almost $51 million so far, so I'm sure there's not a lot invested in that, so they're probably making money. The Illusionist has done 23 to date, and that comes in at number 7. And again, it costs 16.5 to make, so it'll be making money. Little Miss Sunshine is the big winner, of course, $8 million budget. It's done 46 to date, and it's still fairly strong, fairly healthy, and that will translate to DVD well. Hollywood Land, the other noir bit, has only made $10 million, and it's on its way out of the top 10. But I don't think that ever went completely wide, did it? I don't think so. No, it didn't, because it's only in 1,500 screens, and this is only its second week. So I wonder if they're going to roll that out further. I don't know. Crank is at number 10, and that is in the black. It cost $12 million to make, and they've pulled in 24. So Jason Statham, rock on, buddy. So anyway, that's the box office. And again, we're still in these doldrums, and it's kind of boring, but what can you do? Yes, Pirates of the Caribbean, for those who are keeping score, has done $1.01 billion and made more than, did almost $600 million in foreign. I'm fascinated by this. And it looks like it rolled out everywhere, so it may have finally hit its ceiling, but wow. Okay, so anyway, what else do we have to talk about? Well, we have a few things, a few reading assignments. The first thing is I'd asked a question last time about Amazon Unbox, about what the deal was with that. And Cory Doctorow has posted a fascinating commentary on the terms of use of the Amazon Unbox service. just to give you a, I'll put a link in for the reading, but just to give you a flavor of what it, the general thrust of the article, it says Amazon unboxed to customers, eat shit and die. Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. You need to go read it, especially if you were considering, I don't know who the hell would be considering this, honestly, because it's like $14 to download a movie. And anyone with any sense knows that, I mean, anything downloaded, any data can be lost, right? So, I mean, wouldn't you rather go and pay the $14 to get the DVD, even a used DVD, that you have and can own? It's amazing. But basically, it this stuff will run in perpetually on your machine. It doesn't stop if you have to allow it to update. Otherwise, the stuff you bought won't work. It can send information about you and what you do on your computer to Amazon. It's really amazing. I don't know why Amazon agreed to the service, because it's shit is what it is. Not only are you paying a lot for the service of being screwed, but I mean, how many people are actually, how many people do you know actually read the terms of service of stuff? It's really scary. So here's the answer, and the answer is Corey is quite right. And the basic response that we should have to this is to just not use it. I mean, now that it's been exposed as a really bad idea, just don't use it. And one of two things will happen. It'll either go away, okay, or they'll improve it. And I'm sure that Amazon, all these restrictions and stuff were not Amazon's idea. I mean, Amazon has been a pretty cool website, pretty cool service. I mean, I've never had problems with them, and you can go and see where people have said, you know, if they run into problems, then Amazon takes care of them. Hardly a bad thing to say about Amazon, the regular service. And I'm sure that they were just trying to get into the market for downloadable movies, and this was the only way that they could do it, was to put all of these draconian restrictions on things. I don't think Amazon gives a shit what you do with your computer, okay, honestly. But, I mean, this is what they've had to put in place in order to get the rights to give you this service. So don't use it. Don't use it. Let it die on the vine, and that will send the appropriate message. But you really should go and read this, because Corey's done a really good job of providing commentary on the entire rigmarole. So go check that out. Speaking of the industry, I'm also going to give you a link to something that Jeff Jarvis put up on his blog, Buzz Machine. And this is in regards to Doug Morris, who's the head of Universal Music, who basically is attacking YouTube. And this is, again, goes back to the whole Lazy Sunday business, where, you know, YouTube made Lazy Sunday the hit that it was. The internet made Lazy Sunday the hit that it was. It showed that SNL could actually be funny, all right, which to the vast majority of mankind was news, okay? Because Saturday Night Live, I mean, when was the last time that somebody came to you and said, oh, you've really got to watch Saturday Night Live? Instead, they would simply tell you about the one funny bit that came up on one Saturday night, because they knew it wasn't worth anyone's time to go watch a full episode. So I'm sure that put butts in seats for Saturday Night Live like you wouldn't believe. So here he is attacking YouTube. And Morris says, and this is the part that kills me, that they're basically accuses them of stealing, right? So he says that YouTube and other sites like it, quote, owe us tens of millions of dollars. How we will deal with these companies will be revealed shortly. Now, Jarvis has got the exact right idea. It's real simple. Universal Music doesn't need to deal with YouTube. YouTube needs to deal with Universal Music. Now that they're making these kind of threats, YouTube needs to do exactly what Jarvis says, which is take all of their artists and all of their content off and ban it completely. And basically, if you get caught trying to put something up like that, you get told, look, you're endangering the service. You know, if we get sued for this, we might have to shut down. Universal has said they don't want you to be able to do this. In fact, what I would do, honestly, what I would do if I was, well, let me finish this first thought. I'm sorry. I'm like a chihuahua on like speed here. This is what happens when I get well. Isn't it frightening? So YouTube should take all that stuff down. If I was any of Universal Music or Music's competitors, I would go right now and create some kind of license or something with YouTube that would enable that company to be friendly with YouTube, okay? And then put something in place where if somebody tries to put Universal Music content up on YouTube, then YouTube can direct you to this other company and say, why don't you try some of this music instead? Now, watch what would happen if all of a sudden the buzz for all of Universal Music's artists was gone and redirected to someone else. That's how you deal with these people. That's how we enact change. And let me put it to you this way. I'm a firm believer in giving people what they ask for, even if it's stupid what they're asking for, because otherwise they never learn. It's like people who freak out when, you know, kids are left around things that are dangerous, okay? And I'm not saying, you know, hand a kid a loaded gun or something and let them find out, you know. But, I mean, seriously, if you tell a kid not to put their hand by a hot stove because they'll burn it, I mean, does that teach them the lesson? Or does them actually burning one of their fingers teach them a lesson? Because, by God, once they burn one of their fingers, they're not going to try it again. Now, of course, I'm not, no, don't, I want to get the emails of people saying, you're advocating putting kids in stoves. No, I don't want that. I'm just saying, people learn by doing. People learn by experience. People learn by experiencing the repercussions of their actions. They don't believe you when you tell them. And here's a perfect example. In my day job, Virus, I was running into a situation where this was years ago, people were getting laptops for the first time. And they were amazed at the idea that there was a modem built into the laptop. This was years ago. Bear in mind, this was years ago. Now, the building we were in had a digital phone system. The one in your home is analog, right? The one in a lot of office buildings is digital, which means there's more power to it. And if you wanted to use a modem on that system, you would need a digital modem. The modems that, you know, 99% of us have are analog modems, right? For those of you who, does anyone use regular analog modems anymore? I don't even know. But you understand what I'm saying. But they would ask, so you mean I can plug this into the phone socket in the wall right here? You know, meaning they wanted to try it out. Now, there's two ways to react to this. The first way is to simply say, no, you can't. Right? That's it. But instead, what I would say is, yes, you can, but I wouldn't, and here's why. And I would explain to them, if you plug that analog modem into a digital phone jack, 10 times out of 9, you're going to fry your modem, and 1 time out of 10, you might blow your system board. So I wouldn't. Now, because they were told, oh, yes, you could do that, but no, you shouldn't, and here's why. Since they had all that spelled out for them, they knew what the repercussions were, and they didn't want to try it. And I never had anybody go and try that because people were doing it. I mean, you would tell them, don't do it, and they would do it. It's like saying, you know, oh, don't throw me in that briar patch, all right? Oh, don't, you know, kids, don't go for the cookies. You know, it's reverse psychology. Tell them to not do something, they're going to do it. Instead, I told them and I outlined it for them. So I'm a firm believer in give people what they want, even if in reality you know that once they see what's happened, the side effects of it, they're not going to want it anymore. So they don't want their stuff on YouTube? Fine, buddy. It's gone. Take it off of YouTube. Anybody else who's got a problem with it, take it off of YouTube. And you know what? The YouTube community will find something else to do with their time. In fact, most of them are. Most of them are creating their own videos of crazy shit. I mean, like I've said before, you know, it's a good thing that when we were all kids, there was not YouTube, because there would be some silly shit out there with our names on it, and we would never be able to live it down. Can you imagine what it's going to be like 20, 30 years from now when people are able to go dig up stuff on YouTube, like these, you know, these kids dancing around or doing crazy shit or just stupid, these stupid 15-second films of them falling over or some dumb shit? That's going to be out there forever. You know, they have no concept of this. Or maybe they don't care. I don't know. But I would hate it myself. Because God knows, I've done so much stupid stuff. If half of it was captured on film, you know, YouTube would crash. It would be bad. Anyway, all of that to say, tangent, chihuahua, that, you know, give them what they want. The music, I've been a proponent of this for a long time. If the music industry doesn't want file sharing, fine, don't share their files. Share the files of, let's pass around the music that people want us to listen to, right? If you're not, if people want DRM on things, fuck them. Let's go buy stuff that doesn't have DRM on it, and let's give them what they want. You want total control over your product? Fine, Mr. Helper. You've got it, and we don't want your product, so fuck you. I mean, that's basically it, right? So go check out Jarvis's article. It's actually quite good in a response to this, because Jarvis has been a component of this, proponent of this for a while, is the issue of control. We, the readers and the consumers of this stuff, have all the control, and that freaks the media companies right the shit out. So go check it out. Now, speaking of Cory Doctorow, I know this is kind of scary because there's a lot of stuff for you to read. Don't be afraid. It's just words. But Cory Doctorow has written a good article in a good commentary in Locus, science fiction fantasy magazine, about copyright and why it's broken. And takes you through very quickly the origins of copyright, why it worked then, and why it doesn't work now. Now, the only thing that I have to say about this is that I think there is still... I get the feeling from Cory and a lot of folks that they, you know, they want copyright to go away. You know, I mean, I had a problem with Max Berry at one point. I forget where I actually talked about it, but he was talking about where he thought that copyright should last. I know it was on One Tusk. It was on my blog. I'm doing so many things, so many different places. I don't even know where to point you to anymore. But he was talking about how, you know, copyright should last 10 years and then it should go into the public domain. And I've been a firm proponent of the fact that copyright should be basically you own it for as long as you want to own it. You know, if Max Berry wants to have copyright last 10 years and then go into public domain, you know what? He can put stuff in the public domain himself. He should put his money where his mouth is. And in 10 years, we should see 10 years from the day that Jennifer Government got published, he should put it into the public domain. That's his right. He can do that if he wants to. Me, I'd probably do that anyway. I mean, I've got my stuff under Creative Commons, and that's my choice. And I don't want my stuff ever to go into the public domain automatically. You know, if it's my choice, I'll probably do it anyway. But I worry that a lot of these folks are basically saying that they want copyright to go away. And we've talked about this before until we're blue in the face, so I'm not going to go over it right now. It's the whole Steamboat Willie thing of people wanting to be able to remake Steamboat Willie, and it's not their fucking business to rework Steamboat Willie. Let Disney keep their shit. It doesn't matter. It's their shit. They built it. They designed it. They paid for it. Let them keep it. Who the fuck cares? So that's the only thing about this. But it's good in that it outlines how these people who own a lot of this property are dumbasses. I'll just read you a quick line of this to give you a taste so you'll go check it out for yourself. Where is it? The bit about the flaming jackass. That's my favorite part. Hang on a second. Sorry, let me search flaming. There we go. Control F, flaming. I'll read you this one paragraph. When it comes to retail customers for information goods, readers, listeners, watchers, this whole license abstraction falls flat. No one wants to believe that the book he's brought home is only partly his and subject to the terms of a license set out on the flyleaf. You'd be a flaming jackass if you showed up at a con and insisted that your book may not be read aloud, nor photocopied in part and marked up for a writer's workshop, nor made the subject of a piece of fan fiction. And he's absolutely right. And again, if you know any flaming jackasses, fuck them, quit buying their stuff. Anyway, I'm going to post a link to this as well because it's a fascinating look at just a quick read about copyright, why it worked and why it does not work any longer. Now that we've got all this Amazon Unbox stuff and people downloading things, we've got the video stuff available on iTunes, and all the media companies are freaking right the fuck out. I'm also going to post an opinion piece that was posted on the 14th. This is from blogcritics.org, and they're talking about the 10 things that will happen to TV and newspapers. And these are always fascinating to me, is because if you go back and read like Wired magazine from like 5 years ago, then there's always, you know, fun things that they're basically postulating will happen. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong. Usually what I find is that things are, as Ray Kurzweil would say, probably going to happen a lot faster than we think. And other things, aren't going to happen for a while. It's just where the focus of the technology goes. But I think it's fascinating when they're talking about newspapers, which I am still amazed that anyone reads newspapers. I know Scott C. gives me crap on that, you know, crap about that on Neat Coffee. Not really crap, but he's trying to remind me about it. But I just don't, I don't understand why anybody would read newspapers of, you know, news that's old, and then, you know, filtered through one source. And especially since when you've looked at what newspapers have done recently as far as their credibility goes, you know, making shit up, and then when they correct themselves, you know, the big headline is on A1 and then the correction is on A14. So I don't buy that at all. I'm a firm believer in what Jeff Jarvis has said on Buzz Machine, that the future for newspapers is in local news. Anybody can go get national news online, international news online. I mean, basically, if you're looking for international news, where do you go? You go to the BBC, right? So why do we need newspapers for that? What newspapers do well is local coverage. And that's what they have forgotten, and local newscasts have forgotten. Because really, if you watch the local news, what is relevant to your life? The weather. That's usually about it. And you could give a rat's ass about, you know, whatever car crashes didn't affect you, whatever shootings didn't affect you, and whatever, you know, whatever else bullshit. And the story about the tractor, you don't care about that. Or the human interest story about the woman who's got a ginormous cat that is, you know, I don't know, stuck in a colander. I have no idea. But they're all bullshit. You're like, just get me to the fucking weather. I just want the weather. But even then, you don't need that. Here's a perfect example of why TV radio newspaper is in trouble. I was driving around in a downpour. I mean, just out of nowhere, and it just started, the sky unloaded, right? And I'm turning to 750, which is the news radio place here in Atlanta, and I'm waiting for them to get to what's going on with the traffic and what's going on with the weather. And they're still talking about some bullshit, because basically it was like a pocket storm. There were scattered thunderstorms all over the area, but it wasn't affecting everybody, so they weren't reporting on it. So I was like, well, shit, I've got to find out what's going on. I'm like, wait, you know, my car is wading through water here. So I got on my phone and looked up the traffic, and then went to weather.com on my phone, looked up the weather, and I was good. I switched back to my iPod. To hell with you people. So, I mean, you know, they're in trouble, because we can find out the stuff that we need from various sources, and we don't need them. So anyway, just to throw out, I'm going to link to this article as well. You know, go give it a read, because it's interesting to see what they're postulating is going to happen. I think they're dead on. I don't know about the timeline. They're saying that some of this stuff is going to happen within 5 years. I think it's more like two or three on some, and it'll be farther out on others. So that's a real good futurist perspective there, Widge. Some of it's right and some of it's wrong. Way to hedge your bets. But, I mean, it's the truth. I mean, that's how you have to look at this stuff. Okay, one last thing here, and then we'll, you know, it's amazing when I actually have, when I'm not sick and I can actually have time to look for this stuff. For those of you who don't know, and I missed seeing it when it first made the rounds, but a guy, and this, you're like, what does this have to do with entertainment? Bear with me. A guy was a whistleblower from Coast Guard issues. And basically he worked for the company that was working on, you know, re-outfitting boats for the Coast Guard. And he was running into all kinds of problems because there were security issues for the boats and nobody wanted to listen to him. I mean, I'll put links up to the original video and to the update. But basically, they were supposed to have cameras in place to provide surveillance for boats in port so that they didn't have to, you know, post a watch on them. You could just have cameras and then one person in a centralized location could watch. Makes perfect sense. They were supposed to have instruments on the exterior of the boat that were supposed to work for a very significant temperature range from like minus 40 to 110 degrees. And, you know, the Coast Guard is stationed all over the place. They find themselves in action all over the place. So they've got to have, you know, the ability to go places and have the shit work. So he tried and tried and tried to get somebody to listen to him. And then in desperation, filmed himself outlining some of the problems and then posted it to YouTube. Amazing. Now, when I first heard about this story, my brain was going crazy with all the repercussions of this. And I'll tell you this first. He's posted an update, and it looks like he just posted it in the last day, actually, where he's outlining, you know, what's happened since then, the responses that he's gotten, the hearings that might be taking place. And he's also talking about the fact that he's looking at creating a website for whistleblowers that could contain videos like his. So what I anticipated happening when I first heard about this is essentially already underway. And that basically, I mean, we've seen this before, right, to a certain extent. You've had like the Comcast guy who fell asleep on the couch, the tech support guy, the person who went out to fix it, called the tech support line, fell asleep on the couch waiting for tech support to get back to him. That was filmed. That was put online. The AOL call where, the person was trying to cancel his account and being tried to talked out of it for, you know, several minutes, recorded and became a national sensation. So here is, and now we've reached the zenith of this stuff, which is if people don't get listened to, they will do this. They will film themselves sitting in their kitchen, revealing secrets that ordinarily would never see the light of day. This is amazing. I mean, because basically, if I was any company, not just the government, you know, not just the military, not just, you know, a military contractor type person, type organization, any company now, if they are smart, they've got to be worried about the fact that if they are hiding anything, okay? Now, this was putting national security in danger, okay? But anything goes. If they don't like the way something's being handled internally, they can just take it outside. And, you know, no NDA, you can't protect this. You can't lock the guy's opinions up, okay? And secure the guy's opinions. He's filming this in his kitchen. He's posting it to YouTube. Where in the world was there any chance to stop this from happening? There wasn't. So every company now has to be aware that if they're doing something that's bad, you know, or even, you know, not even bad for national security, bad for the stockholders, bad because it might come out and cause a scandal, any definition of bad that you can think of, because individuals will decide what's bad enough to do this. You can sit in your kitchen and record a YouTube and expose the whole thing. And now, I mean, the guy was talking in the update how he's been on, you know, interviewed on the radio and how he's been named a man of the year and he's been named, you know, he's been on all these shows to get interviewed. You can't tell me that this has not gotten out and people aren't thinking about this. Well, you know, I was having this problem and no one's listening to me. What can I do about it? In fact, I mean, I can't watch all of YouTube. Maybe they're doing it right now. Maybe there's other whistleblower videos that are out there right now. And I'm not talking about like the whistleblower stuff like for Fox, which was done through other news programs. I'm not talking about official. I'm not talking about, you know, news expose programs. I'm talking about a guy sitting in his freaking kitchen with what looks to be like a simple webcam. That is huge. So the idea of taking customer service to the web just got taken up a few notches, okay? Now, here's the other thing that I was thinking of, and this is the only thing that scares me about a whistleblower website. And I'm not saying this to downgrade what he's doing, because I think it's fascinating. I am absolutely intrigued by this idea. But Bailey was the one who told me about this, and Bailey mentioned, he was the one who brought it up first. I was talking about all the legitimate things that could come out as a result of this. And he was saying, this is even more of a concern, you could have somebody sitting in their kitchen with a webcam making up total bullshit about some company and acting like they're an insider and putting out all kinds of crap. And you know, if they work at it a little bit, it turns into a huge scandal and they didn't even do anything wrong. So companies, whether it's, and this, like I said, this goes everywhere. This goes to entertainment. This goes everywhere. Need to have somebody who is monitoring situations like this, who can provide like a rapid response public relations thing to deal with these nightmares, because they're going to happen. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a cottage industry of of and I know that there's rapid response PR folks, because there's all kinds of scandals that come up with celebrities and whatever, and they swoop in and try to help. But this is this is unprecedented. This is, you know, this could come out of, you thought stuff could come out of nowhere before. This is out of nowhere. So, you know, you could have PR firms that do nothing but are like Delta Force. I mean, they come in and try to assist with stuff like this. And, you know, and I'm not advocating covering this stuff up. I think it needs to come to light. But companies, I tell you, if they're smart, they're looking at this. They're watching all of this stuff. But companies generally aren't smart, and they probably not. They, oh, it won't happen to us. But I can tell you, there are certain people within the companies that are sweating, and they're sweating bullets because of this. So this is all fascinating shit. It's great to live in the future, isn't it? So anyway, is that enough for you to think about? I don't know. It's enough for me to think about. So go check out the links. You know, I've switched to doing the box office news in the podcast, because it's not fair for you folks that are driving in your car, because you're like, well, damn it, I miss. Oh, how I miss Widge's wisdom when it comes to the box office. Whatever. But the links I can't do anything about. But you can come back to Quick Stop and you can grab it, grab the links and go read this stuff, because this is all fascinating. This is going to change everything that we do, all the stuff that we're talking about here. The video download services, the ongoing war about copyright, the ongoing war about dumbass companies trying to keep their stuff off of YouTube. And you need to be involved, because, you know, first of all, you need to be involved with everything, right? You need to be aware of what's going on with politics and do your homework. I'm assuming that you guys are up on current events, so that, you know, you're not worrying about, you can worry about the entertainment shit after you get done with, you know, who are you going to vote for in November and stuff, whoever that is, right? So get the important stuff out of the way first, but be aware of this, because this is going to determine what we do for entertainment, okay, and what we're allowed to do for entertainment by these big companies for years to come. These are going to set precedents that we're going to have to be dealing with the repercussions of for years to come. So go check this stuff out. Let me know your thoughts. Send me an email at widgesucks@needcoffee.com and let me know what you think about it. And if there's anything else like this that you found that needs to be, you know, you'd like to share with folks, send it to me as well, and I'd like to take a look at it. So there you have it. What else do I have to tell you? Oh, we're getting DragonCon stuff up on needcoffee.com, because we've been playing catch up, because I have been sick as a freaking dog and sleeping way too much, which for me is hell, as you know. So I've got two podcasts going on over there. Every Tuesday we've got the DVD Heads Up, DVD and other things, but mostly DVDs, where I talk about stuff that's streaming on that week and what you should be aware of. And then Weekend Justice, which is our recommendations podcast, which goes up every Friday, where I will give you some ideas on what you can do with your weekend, since they are precious to us. And there's all kinds of shit happening all over the place. So stay tuned here at Quick Stop. Come check us out at needcoffee.com, and we'll go from there. So thanks, everyone, for listening, all five of my listeners, and we'll see you next time. That's it. Now I'm going to go collapse. Actually, no. I'm going to go run and frolic like the chihuahua on speed that I am. Woohoo! Be good.